Hello, darlings.
Hey-o.
I told Kara, now that her coffee shop is open again, I'm going to have to go to the gym.
Yeah, it's bad.
That seems better than just telling myself I won't drink the sugary coffee drinks. Can't. That's not going to happen.
No.
This is the Witch's Magic Murder of Mystery Podcast.
This is Kara.
I'm Megan.
Hey, guys.
I have a murder today.
Okay. Tell me about it, Megan.
It's an old case, as we all know, that I love. Yeah. It was going to be my Patreon. I thought, you know how I always think, like, I know what the Patreon's going to want this month.
I'm going to get it right.
Well, I didn't. They went a different direction than I expected. Yeah. I know.
So you just had that one.
And so I was like, well, that's okay. I wanted to do this one anyway. Yeah. So we're doing it for the regular feed. If you all don't know, on the Patreon, where, by the way, there's like, what, 70 episodes now over there? In case you want more of us. Also, if you are on the Body of a Goddess level or higher, you get to choose which episode we do.
It's so fun.
Okay. Elizabeth Short was born July 29th, 1924 in Boston.
Oh.
She had four sisters. She was the middle child.
Oh, okay.
Five girls. Okay.
I'm the middle of five children. I feel it.
She spent most of her early years in the New England area, Massachusetts and everything.
Okay.
Her dad was a sailor who built miniature golf courses.
What?
I know.
In the 20s? That's amazing.
He lost all his money in the 1929 stock market crash.
Dang.
And then his car was found abandoned on the Charleston Bridge in 1930. So it was assumed that he had jumped.
Oh.
And at that point, Elizabeth's mother became a single mother with five daughters.
Oh my goodness.
So she started working as a bookkeeper to support her family.
Okay.
Now, Elizabeth had some respiratory issues, recurring bronchitis and severe asthma attacks. So she had to have lung surgery when she was like 15.
Oh my gosh.
It's major.
Lung surgery?
And then her doctors were like, it would probably help if she got to stay in like a milder climate. You know, it's pretty cold there in the winter. So her mom started sending her to Miami to stay with family down there with relatives during the winter.
Oh.
And I'm like, Miami?
What?
Bienvenida a Miami. She dropped out of high school after her sophomore year.
Okay.
And in 1942, Elizabeth's mom got a letter, a very unexpected letter.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm not dead, actually. This is from her supposedly dead husband.
What?
I'm not actually dead. I'm alive and well in California. I'm just like, why did he write her? Did he like get overcome with guilt and just had to let her know?
Like one day was like, she probably wants to know.
Yeah.
She probably
could have just stayed gone at that point.
Yeah. You were dead.
I'm not actually dead. I faked my death to get away from you and the kids.
And the five kids we have. Oh my gosh.
Just let her think you died.
Yeah, just it's better that way at this point.
Anyway, so at that point, Elizabeth decided to move across the country. She was 18 years old to go live in California with her dad.
Oh.
She hadn't seen him since she was six. But
and he was okay with this?
Apparently. Although they didn't stay living together very long.
Okay.
She moved out after a few months.
Okay.
Now, one of the things that is often said about Elizabeth is that she was an aspiring actress chasing her dreams. And that's why she went to California, which may have been true. But it also could just be conjecture. When we talk about the lore of this case, that's almost always said about her.
Right.
But she doesn't actually have any acting credits to her name. I mean, maybe she just hadn't struck it big yet or whatever, but it doesn't even seem like she was trying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like she had jobs, but none of them were in the film acting world.
Yeah.
So it could just be conjecture. She was also very pretty. She grabbed attention wherever she went. She was like small. She was 5'5", weighed 115 pounds. She had really light blue eyes and really dark brown hair. So when you see pictures of her, those light eyes really stand out. In September of 1943, she got arrested for underage drinking. We've all been there, right? I don't think hers was at a Jimmy Buffett concert.
Probably not.
And the authorities sent her back to Boston.
Oh.
She got arrested for underage drinking, which fascinates me because she was over 18, which I get that that's still underage for drinking, but she was an adult.
Right.
And they were like, we're shipping you back to Boston.
You got to go to your mom.
She didn't stay near Boston. She ended up going to Florida instead. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like she really spent much time with her family in Massachusetts. And I don't know if that has to do with the lung issues and not wanting to be in Massachusetts or if there were any kind of family issues.
Right.
Like, who knows?
Yeah.
While living in Florida, Elizabeth met Major Matthew Michael Gordon, Jr., an Army Air Force officer. He proposed and she accepted, but then he died in a plane crash in 1945,
Oh my
which gosh. Is just so sad. The following year, Elizabeth decided to move back to LA.
Okay.
She found work as a waitress and rented a room on Hollywood Boulevard.
Hmm.
One thing I thought as I was kind of going through her history is how many opportunities she had to not end up where she did. Because
right.
she was in LA and they sent her back to Boston.
Yeah.
And then she's like Florida. Between Boston and Miami. And like if she had been able to get married, maybe she would have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, stayed there or gone wherever he was, but not ended up back in LA.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, she ended up back in LA.
Hmm.
So now we're up to January 9th, 1947.
Okay.
Elizabeth has been dating a man, a married salesman. His name is Robert Manley.
Manley.
He's so manly.
He's so manly. He man must be so manly.
What I said, I was
that
like,
if he were to fall off a building, he'd go out of his way to fall and land on a girl.
They called him Red, and I don't know exactly why. I don't know if he was a redhead or what. But anyway, Robert Red Manley. And the two of them have just returned from a trip to San Diego. Manley dropped Elizabeth off at the Biltmore Hotel in downtown LA. She was going to meet her sister there, who was visiting from Boston.
Okay.
Some reports say that hotel staff saw Elizabeth there using the telephone in the hotel lobby. And then she was seen a little bit later, about 3/8 of a mile, which I think is like the most specific.
Right. Yeah.
She was just seen a little
bit. She was up the street.
At the Crown Grill Cocktail Lounge.
Oh, okay.
And that's the last sighting, for sure, of her alive. There's some speculation that people saw her a little bit after that, but none of those have ever been validated.
Okay.
Now, that's January 9th. On the morning of January 15th, so there's a week where nobody knows where she was or what she was doing. On January 15th, 1947, Elizabeth Short's naked body was found in a vacant lot along the side of South Norton Avenue, just a few feet from the sidewalk. She was 22 years old. She was first spotted by a mother and a young son out taking a walk, which is horrific.
Yeah.
They thought it was a mannequin.
Oh, my gosh.
Particularly because of the condition of the body.
Oh.
Her body was cut into two pieces, severed at the waist. The lower half of her body was positioned away from the upper half, and her intestine was tucked beneath her.
Stop.
The body was posed with her hands over her head, with her elbows bent at right angles, and her legs were spread apart. She had been drained of blood. There was no blood at the scene at all, so they think she must have been, well, not just think, but that tells them that she was killed somewhere else. And this left her skin very, very pale white, which is probably another reason why she didn't look real.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh.
The body had been washed by the killer. They think it was like wiped down with gasoline to kill any possible evidence. Her face had been slashed from the corners of her mouth to her ears, which gave her that kind of Joker smile. Yeah. They call it the Glasgow smile.
Yeah.
Glasgow smile. There were several cuts along her thigh and breasts. Entire portions of flesh had been removed. There were ligature marks on her ankles, wrists, and neck. It was determined that she had been dead for about 10 hours, putting her time of death sometime during the evening of January 14th or the early morning hours of January 15th. So do you know which case it is?
Black Dahlia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A newspaper reporter.
So crazy.
I just didn't want to tell you at the beginning that that's the one. The Black Dahlia.
I do remember the part about her intestines and stuff, though.
Yeah.
Oof.
There were lots of just sensational details reported in the press, which one of the things that I even read in a few of the articles as I was researching, they talk about this is gross, but just take heart in the fact that it's probably not true. They said that her stomach was full of feces, like she had been forced to eat feces before her death. But that's not in the autopsy report.
Okay, yeah.
And so the police don't talk about it. So, I'm not sure where it first got reported, but since it's not in the autopsy report, I don't.
Right.
There's no reason to think that it's true.
Yeah.
But it's just like random details like that because it was such a sensational case that get thrown in. And then, of course, they just get repeated.
Right. Yep.
A newspaper reporter was one of the first on the scene and took several photos, which you can find all over.
Right.
The
it's like when I close my eyes, that's the like the main one of her face and stuff.
Yeah. I can just see it right now.
Yep.
It's an incredibly famous case. I'm sure that most of you have heard of it. But if you haven't, and if you decide that you want to look up her photos, just keep in mind that they are, you won't ever get them out of your head.
Right. Exactly. It's
horrible.
Yeah.
And also keep in mind that she's a real person with like hopes and dreams and a family. And, you know, she's been reduced now to the Black Dahlia. And listen, I'm doing an episode on her, so I'm not trying to be like,
yeah.
I remember she was one of the very first true crime cases that I ever got into.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why it struck me so much was because of the crime scene photos. I mean, I remember being, I think I was like in middle
school. Seeing it in like Time Magazine or something.
And just being shocked that such a thing was on the internet.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been middle school because of the internet. So high school?
High school,
let's
yeah.
pretend I'm not as old as I am. Detectives found a heel print among tire tracks near the body. And a cement sack containing watery blood was also found nearby. They think that that may have been how her body was transported.
Yeah.
Was inside that sack.
Oof.
An autopsy showed that Elizabeth had been cut in half using a technique taught in the 1930s called a hemicorporectomy.
Mm-hmm.
There was very little bruising along the incision, which suggested that she had been cut in half after death.
Okay.
Not before. Mm-hmm. And there was some bruising along the right and front of her scalp, consistent with blows to the head.
Right.
But no skull fracture.
Yeah.
The cause of death was determined to be hemorrhaging from the lacerations to her face and the blows to her head and her face. So the doctor who performed her autopsy also found evidence of rape, which I don't want to go into. Mm-hmm. Just know that it's there. Yeah. And they took some samples to test for sperm, but they came back negative. Of course, through all this discovery and medical examination, no one knew who this woman was. She ended up being identified from her fingerprints thanks to that underage drinking arrest.
Yeah.
So as soon as she'd been identified, this is horrible. Mm-hmm. Reporters from the Los Angeles Examiner called Elizabeth's mom and they were like, your daughter won a beauty contest. Yeah. And then they talked to her forever and got as much personal information out of her as they could. And then they told her the truth.
Right.
That your daughter actually has been horrifically murdered.
Thanks for the info.
What on earth?
Horrible people.
And then the same newspaper was like, but for real, we're going to pay you. We'll pay for you to come out here to help with the police investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just more shady behavior because when her mom came out there, reporters kept her away from the police and other reporters.
Yeah.
Because they just wanted the scoop.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Anything for the
publicity.
Right away, Elizabeth Short was reduced to a headline.
Right.
Rather than a person.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't believe the way they treated her mom.
Yeah. It's gross.
So this is when the nickname the Black Dahlia pops up, started by the media. I even remember the first time I read about it, they were like, they called her the Black Dahlia because she always had a Black Dahlia flower in her hair. And before she died, she had the nickname. And apparently none of that is true.
Right.
They just called her that. There was a movie out at the time called The Blue Dahlia.
Mm-hmm.
So the Black Dahlia was probably just like to capitalize.
Ooh, this is morbid and let's take on.
Yeah. Right. Like it was just this the movie's famous, out. Uh-huh. So it's another way to make a connection to make it famous. And then she had a penchant for black sheer clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So they called her the Black Dahlia just to kind of go along with the movie, The Blue Dahlia. And that's it.
Yeah.
Kara, I'm all about some Korean, Japanese beauty brands. I feel like every TikTok I see promoting like Korean beauty brands, I'm like, oh my God, it works.
I know. My brother Josh got me hooked on Korean beauty brands forever ago, and I literally will try anything and everything.
I know, me too. And it always seems to work.
So good,
Yamen is a leading Japanese beauty brand which blends modern technology with traditional beauty rituals to revolutionize the industry. You guys, we got sent the Yamen Spa Styler. You guys know I'm super into my hair and taking care of it, especially the older I get. I talk about it probably too much.
And she has so much hair.
So much hair. So blow drying my hair is an ordeal. But this blow dryer has a faster dry time and red light therapy. It has a scalp massager that comes with it, and it eliminates static. It has 3 speed settings. I super love it. Like, I don't like to blow dry my hair because I'm always worried about any damage it might
do. Yeah, you're like, let's see how long I can go without.
Yeah, I just don't.
Natural but this one, curls.
Really, it feels like it's not damaging my hair.
Yeah.
It feels like it's good
making
for
it better.
Right? It gives your hair frizz-free body bounce and shine, while at the same time offering a soothing and stimulating option with the scalp lift massage attachment. Now, like I said, I'm super into my hair, so it doesn't bother me to buy like luxury level products. This is a splurge, but we have a discount code.
Yeah. Okay, to experience the future of beauty, listeners can visit YA-MANUSA.com to use the code WMMM for a 20% discount. That's WMMM at YA-MANUSA.com.
Kara.
Yes, Megan.
I have been seeing all over TikTok these hair straighteners. Ever since I got my hair cut, I'm still feel like I'm learning how to do my hair all over again. Let me tell you, I have found one that works really well. It's from Tymo,
uh-huh.
T-Y-M-O. M-O.
Yes.
And it is the company for getting the best type of straightener for everything your hair could possibly need. It's all over social media right now with products from $59.99 to top-of-the-line straighteners. Each of their products are built to last and have so many options for whatever your hair needs are. So Kara and I received a couple of the products.
Oh my gosh. We got a straightener
and a blow dryer. Yeah. So I'm going to talk about the straightener because that's the one that I have used. It has a cordless design, which makes it so handy.
You traveled with it.
Yes. So it's great for getting a good hair reset on the go because it's so portable and convenient. It's called the Porta. It has this 3D comb design, which is enhanced by cutting edge MCH anionic technology. So you brush it through your hair, it straightens as it goes, and it pushes against this ceramic plate that gives a frictionless glide that promises to curb frizz by 50%. And I've totally seen that because my hair gets frizzy and this just really smooths it out. I really loved it.
Okay, so I got the air hype. I'm obsessed with it. I have just like naturally curly, wavy hair. So it was a huge game changer for me. It dries your hair in half the normal time and it keeps your hair safe and shiny, which I noticed immediately. Mm-hmm. I didn't even need to straighten it afterwards. And usually I do because usually I have all those wild like curls left over.
Yeah.
The wind power on this thing is intense. It's wild. Like I turned it up. I was like, let's play with these buttons. Okay. So it has three magnetic styling attachments. They're all amazing. You know how some blow dryers you get are like if you go to a hotel and there's a diffuser and you're like, oh my gosh, this is like tearing my hair to pieces and it's right. going to be so tangled. Not with this one.
Nice.
And it's magnetic. So it's great.
So right now, you guys, our listeners can get 30% off their first order at TymoBeauty.com. TymoBeauty.com. Using the code WMM30. So that's just two M's. You guys know our codes usually have three. So just keep that in mind.
So with so many great products to choose from, now's the time to upgrade your styling and curling kit. So go to TymoBeauty.com and use the code WMM30 for 30% off your first purchase.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
In newspapers, Elizabeth was described as an adventuress who prowled Hollywood Boulevard and called the murder a sex fiend slaying. So they basically insinuated that she was a sex worker and a call girl, even though there's absolutely no evidence to back that up.
Yeah.
There's also...
Also, even if she was, get out of her business.
Right. I mean, there were all sorts of rumors. I think people... Part of it is that they didn't really have much
right, so they just wanted to go off of everything.
So they were speculating about everything. Mm-hmm. But also, like, this case was so famous right away, right? Because, I mean, look how her body was found and everything about it is so sensational. And so everybody's talking about it. So there's all these rumors and they all get repeated and then pretty quickly you don't know what's fact and what's telephone. Fiction. But they did say stuff like, I think newspapers reported police officers as being like, she knew like 50 men at the time of her death.
Oh my gosh.
So anyway, on January 21st, a week after the murder, James Richardson, the editor of the Examiner, got a phone call. And the person who called was like, I'm the one who killed the Black Dahlia. Mm-hmm. You're doing a great job covering the case. I'm going to turn myself in eventually, and you should expect some souvenirs of Beth Short in the mail. 3 days later, a manila envelope shows up addressed to the Los Angeles Examiner and other Los Angeles papers. The words in the message have been cut out of newspapers and pasted together, and it said, here are Dahlia's belongings, letter to follow. Inside the envelope, there was Elizabeth Short's birth certificate, some random business cards, photographs, a list of names written on pieces of paper, and an address book with the name Mark Hansen embossed on the cover. So these were all supposed to have been Elizabeth's belongings. Mm-hmm. The packet of the items had been wiped clean with gasoline, just like Elizabeth's body, which made police suspect that the packet had come from the killer. I think that's questionable.
Right, because that evidence was already all out there.
Well, we already know the newspapers are doing anything they could to be involved, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's... The fact that the phone call took the time to praise the newspaper is interesting to me. Like, who cares?
Exactly.
The newspaper reporters, I'm sure, knew the gasoline detail.
Right. That's what, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, evidence was out there. So, it was all known.
There were several partial fingerprints lifted from the package, but then when they were sent to the FBI, they were compromised in transit. So, couldn't be properly analyzed.
That's convenient.
The same day that the manila envelope was discovered, there was another discovery just a few miles from the spot where Elizabeth's body had been found. It was a handbag and a black suede shoe. They were found on top of a garbage can in an alley. So police went and got them, but they had also been cleaned with gasoline. Mm. So no fingerprints.
Right.
A few days after all of this, on January 26th, the Examiner got another letter, this time handwritten, which read, here it is.
Here it is.
Turning in Wednesday, January 29th at 10 a.m. Had my fun at police. Black Dahlia Avenger. What? I think the fact that this one's handwritten is also, like, if the other one was valid, I think this one's fake.
Right.
It gave a time and a place where the killer said he turned himself in. Police went there. They waited. No one showed up. Mm-hmm. Instead, at 1 o'clock that day, the examiner offices received another cut and pasted letter, which read, "Have changed my mind. You would not give me a square deal. Dahlia killing was justified." I don't know.
Sure, bud.
Another paper, the Herald Express, also received several letters reportedly from the killer, again made with cut and pasted clippings, one of which read, "I will give up on Dahlia killing if I get 10 years. Don't try to find me." Which I don't know what that means. If they go 10 years without being found.
Right.
I don't know.
Or if I only get 10 years in prison.
Maybe. Also, "I will give up on Dahlia killing."
Like, give you the details, maybe.
It's annoying.
Yeah, that is annoying. Because, sir, you've already killed her, so you can't give up.
A couple months later, on March 14th, there was a suicide note written in pencil on a piece of paper tucked in a shoe in a piece of men's clothing that was left by the ocean. So it's at the edge of the ocean. Okay. Mm-hmm. Somebody finds a pile of men's clothing, and in the clothing, they find this note that says, "To whom it may concern, I have waited for the police to capture me for the Black Dahlia killing."
We're getting real proper now. Mm-hmm.
"But I have not. I am too much of a coward to turn myself in, so this is the best way out for me. I couldn't help myself for that or this. Sorry, Mary." This was reported to the police, but it didn't lead anywhere.
Okay.
750 investigators from the LAPD and other departments worked this case, including 400 sheriff's deputies and 250 California State Patrol officers.
That's so crazy.
It's nuts. Mm-hmm. Over 150 men were interviewed, and because of the way that she had been cut and dissected, LAPD thought that it was possible that the murderer was someone with a medical background.
Right.
So they served a warrant to the University of Southern California Medical School because it was located closest to the site where the body had been discovered.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Requesting a complete list of the program students. And the university agreed to give it to them as long as the students' identities remained private. Mm-hmm. They ran background checks on all of them and turned up nothing.
Right.
Police also searched storm drains for evidence. Evidenced?
Yep.
Police also searched storm drains for evidence. They searched abandoned buildings and other sites along the Los Angeles River, but nothing was ever found. There was a $10,000 reward offered, which would be about $140,000 now, for information leading to Elizabeth's killer. But again, nothing. Like I've already mentioned, this was a sensational case. It was front page news for 35 days after her body was found. You know they didn't actually have an update. It's like how today with the 24-hour news cycle, they just rehash the same thing over and over. But like, can you imagine the front page of the newspaper, the exact same story for over a month?
Over and over again, yeah.
Someone who used to be a friend of Elizabeth said that she liked to get guys worked up over her, but then she'd leave them hanging dry.
Okay, well,
that's just flirting.
That's just...
But this led some reporters and detectives to consider the possibility that Elizabeth might have been a lesbian.
Oh, gosh, it always comes down to that.
Because, of course. I mean,
if you're not,
because she likes to get guys worked up. Yeah, right.
If you're not into it that much and you don't want to go further, you must be a lesbian.
It can't gotta be that something be a lesbian. Else changed your mind.
Yeah.
I just think that's, again, it's another one of those random theories that pops up in the case and actually so gets crazy. Repeated a lot. They're like, they think she was a lesbian. No, they actually don't. It was a theory that was thrown around and dismissed pretty quickly because there was literally nothing to back it up. So,
but she knew 50 Moon.
I know. It's like, pick a lane. Which way are we going to criticize her? She liked men too much or not at all. You know? So Elizabeth died in January. And by spring, this was a cold case. There just weren't any new leads. Police blamed the media for compromising whatever evidence they might have had initially and for reporting things that weren't true, which I agree the media was a mess with this.
Yeah.
But there were lots of criticisms of the LAPD at the time, not just in this case, but others, especially homicide cases involving women. So many things wrong.
Yep.
Over 500 people have confessed to the Black Dahlia murder.
Isn't that crazy?
Some of whom had not even been born at the time of Elizabeth Short's death. And they're just like, I did it.
I want that publicity.
What on earth?
Yeah.
So we're going to go through some of the suspects in the case. Remember the name of the address book Mark Hansen, yeah, was embossed on the cover, mm-hmm, of the address book. He became a suspect because of that.
Right.
He was a wealthy guy. He owned a local nightclub and a theater, and he had a connection to Elizabeth. She had stayed at a house that belonged to a friend of his. Okay. I don't know for how long or whatever, right, but there was that connection. And apparently, he's the one who identified those belongings that had been left on top of the trash can,
oh,
as like the handbag and the shoe, mm-hmm, as belonging to Elizabeth.
Right.
Elizabeth's roommate, Ann Toth, said that Hansen had come on to Elizabeth and she had rejected him, which could have been motive,
mm-hmm,
but ultimately he was cleared of suspicion in her death.
Right.
They also investigated that married boyfriend of hers, mm-hmm, Robert Manley.
Red.
He took several polygraph tests and passed them all, which we know is not necessarily right, anything, but
right,
I never saw anything else about him that made him suspicious. I mean, he was married and her boyfriend, but I don't know. In 2003, Ralph Asdell, one of the original detectives on the case, told the Times that he believed he had interviewed Short's killer. It was a man who had been seen with his sedan parked near the vacant lot where her body was discovered in the early morning hours of January 15, 1947. A neighbor had driven by that day and stopped to dispose of a bag of lawn clippings in the lot. He had seen the sedan parked there with its right rear door open, and the driver was standing in the lot.
Mm.
So, who knows if,
right,
he showed up as maybe he was getting ready to dump, yeah, the body. I don't know.
Yeah.
The owner of the sedan was followed to a local restaurant where he worked, but was ultimately cleared of suspicion.
Hmm.
In 1991, a woman named Janice Knowlton, she was 10 years old at the time of Elizabeth's murder. She claimed that she had witnessed her father, George Knowlton, beat Short to death with a claw hammer in the detached garage of her family's home. She published a book called Daddy Was the Black Dahlia Killer. Which is like, okay, in 1995. And she made in the book additional claims that her father had sexually molested her.
Mm.
The book was condemned as trash by the author's stepsister, who was like, she believed it, saying that Janice believed this to be true, mm-hmm, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I know because I lived with her father for 16 years. The only thing I want to say about that, I don't know anything more than what I just told you about the case.
Right.
But I will say, just because you lived there,
doesn't mean
you don't know what could have happened.
Right, exactly. Right.
And I always hate to discount,
mm-hmm,
any person who,
yeah,
has claims of abuse.
Yeah.
But beyond that, a detective with knowledge of the case told the Times that Knowlton's claims were not consistent with the facts of the case. So beating Short to death with a claw hammer, it seems like that doesn't line up with the injuries,
right,
that we have read about to Elizabeth's body.
Right. So. She had some bruising, but not that, mm-hmm, like a claw. Yeah.
The 2017 book, Black Dahlia, Red Rose, focuses on a group of men, Leslie Dillon, Mark Hansen, Jeff Connors, and Finnis Brown, who was a lead detective in the case. And the author theorized that this group of men were involved in a scheme for robbing, mm-hmm, hotels and that they were responsible for Elizabeth's murder because she knew too much.
Mm-hmm.
The author also says the murder took place at the Astor Motel in Los Angeles. And the reason why she thinks this is because on the morning of January 15th, 1947, the day Elizabeth's body was found, one of the motel owners opened the door to one of his cabins and found the room, quote, covered in blood and fecal matter.
Mm.
In another cabin, he discovered that someone had left a bundle of women's clothes wrapped up in brown paper, which was also stained with blood.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of reporting anything to the police,
he just cleaned it up.
He cleaned it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had been arrested 4 days earlier for beating his wife, and he didn't want to risk another run-in with the police.
It's so ridiculous.
Well, it's just weird because I'm like, you wouldn't have had a run-in with the police.
Right.
You just would have called.
For help. Yeah.
Who knows? Like, because there's so little evidence in this case, what if.
That would have solved it.
Well, if it was related, oh, right, to, yeah, Elizabeth's murder.
Or like, it would have solved somebody else's murder.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to stop here, because again, this is such a famous case. There's so much information, mm-hmm, out there about it. I'm going to stop here. And in the next episode, we're going to go into some possibly related murders. There's a whole, mm-hmm, bunch. And so I'm going to go through a summary of each of those.
Okay.
Along with one more suspect. And for me personally, this is the suspect that
you think did it.
That I believe, okay, did it. It's not a hot take. There's a whole lot of people who are like, this is who did it.
It has to be.
So we'll go into the details of that,
okay,
in the next episode.
All right.
Okay.
Yay.
Thank you all so much for listening.
Yeah.
We love you
so much.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.